Hello guys, welcome to another Chuck D podcast, more than your normal martial arts gym. We're going to go into a bit of a Q&A. I don't know whether a lot of you know, but basically some of the people that I follow, one of the guys is called Gary Vaynerchuk. He's a businessman from over in the States, in New York. He runs Vaynerchuk Media. He's really big on YouTube and definitely someone that you should check out, because his work ethic is absolutely phenomenal. I've basically been watching a lot of his stuff, and there's some kind of underlying themes that keep coming up on all his videos, and I feel a kind of connection with him because of the work ethic and the graft that he puts in and stuff like that. I mean, I work some crazy hours as well. Spend a lot of time in the car and listen to his podcasts and stuff. I just find it inspiring. And so I want to answer like a couple of questions, or the like regular questions that come up on his interviews. So like the first one was like, how do people kind of deal with this level of inspiration, and how do you feel like being an inspirational figure? And now I don't think this stuff is inspirational. It's just me doing my thing, and I've got a ridiculous drive. I mean, it's something that comes kind of from inside. It's not a persona. It's not something that I can try to be. You can tell when someone's faking it, and when someone's actually doing it like 24/7. I mean, like this morning, I've been doing personal training sessions. Got back, got the kids to school, got my breakfast. Now a little bit of kind of personal time, kind of studying and that kind of thing, like personal development work. Now onto some like more like business stuff, like coaching stuff, talking to you guys and trying to share some of this, some of my journey, some of my story, and I think it's this kind of work ethic that kind of shines through. Now, I always have a bit of a laugh and a joke with a guy called Carl Greaves. He's one of the top MCs in the country, and he always tries ripping me over like these inspirational posts when you see like a lion saying a beast will be a beast until it has to do like animal acts and stuff like that. It's kind of cast me out from the pack, and I'll come back leading it, and all these like cliched inspirational quotes. That's not really me, and this is why me and Kyle have the crack together, because he knows that this is like what I'm doing 24/7, and we've known each other a long time, so it's kind of a bit of a laugh and a joke. There's so many people out there that are faking it, that are kind of just copy and pasting inspirational stuff. I mean, it's easy, the content's out there, but people that actually live it, people that are actually doing it, people that are working like 15, 16 hours a day, that's double your normal working day. Like most people go to work for like 8 hours a day. They've got loads of free time, and they'll maybe get home, sit down, have the tea, watch a load of TV. To be honest, I can't remember the last time I watched TV. I mean, I basically get in from the gym, do my admin, and then I'm off to bed, and then straight up at like 6 the next morning to be back on it. So it's a message. there's lots of people out there that are doing this thing, but this inspirational stuff, if people choose to follow me and see the work ethic, if I can inspire that, then good, great. People are kind of following in my footsteps, and I'm leading by example, and kind of one of the things that makes me feel like being a true man, just kind of trying to walk that line and walk that pathway. So yeah, this is one of the things. Now, one of the next things was just kind of recognizing what your key strengths are. Everyone talks about being a rounded fighter and being able to work out what your style of fighting is. Are you a boxing fighter? Are you a kicking fighter? Are you a clinch fighter? And going back to this Gary Vaynerchuk stuff, he says, like, triple down on your strengths. Like, spend more time on your strengths, making those into your superpowers. Now, you don't see Spider-Man trying to be Superman, because Spider-Man isn't Superman. Spider-Man will fly around, he'll shoot his webs out and do all these things. He doesn't try and fly like Superman. So it's not important to him. He's working on what his strengths are. So if you talk about any kind of key fighters, any kind of famous fighters, what you'll notice is that people have like a preconceived idea of what their strengths are. I mean, looking back to when me and Liam Harrison were going over to Thailand and training out at GT Gym all the time. Liam was planned to fight a guy from Kate Pontip Gym, and this video came out of John Pop throwing loads of left hook. I think it was Salmon Pry, the guy that he was scheduled to fight. John Pop was swinging loads of left hooks against Salmon Pry because they'd seen Liam fight. They knew he had a dangerous left hook, and John Pop was just like walking forward, swinging his hands around, and going, "Liam hooks high, Liam hooks high, Liam hook it, left hook, Liam left hook," and for me it was like they've kind of worked out what Liam's strengths are, so that's where they were spending their attention. Now, if you can work out what your strengths are, then this is what's going to make you a better fighter. It's better to, like I say, triple down on your strengths and work on your strengths and make those into superpowers, rather than trying to be a totally rounded fighter and good in all areas. That's something kind of, as you progress, you start covering those bases anyway. You get to a certain level of competence, and you learn how to deal with a boxer. You learn how to deal with a clincher. You learn how to deal against someone that's kicking you, and you dealing with counter fighters and stuff like that. Now, if you're, for instance, matched against someone like Sanchai, now, yeah, okay, he's been in the game for so long. And he's at such a level where it's kind of like he's good in all areas because he's been at the top of the game for so long. He's faced so many different opponents. I think I read a statistic the other day that he just won his 300th fight. Now, if you're winning 300 fights, I'm sure he's had near on 400 fights now. It's absolutely amazing. This is where the experience comes into play, because you get the experience of dealing with all the different style fighters, different strengths of fighters, speed, power, explosiveness, all these kind of performance factors, on top of all your like technical skills and stuff like that. So if you've got one thing, work on your strengths. Find a technique that really kind of connects to you, and then drill that for 1,000 times, because that's your thing, that's your game, and that's where you should be spending your time. Now, coming into the next segment, we start talking about optimizing your time. Now, when you're optimizing your time, I had a big thing of I used to spend a lot of time going over to Leeds, do like 3-4 nights a week over in Leeds. But when I was staying in York, I used to look after my own training. I used to go down to the local fitness first, and basically just used to go in, spend a lot of time on the treadmill. I had a basic program when I first started out, but everyone always used to say, well, boxers, they always do the road work. Well, I had the luxury of going to fitness first. I run on a treadmill. I didn't have to be out in the rain and the wet and stuff like that. So I was like, well, spent loads of time on the treadmill. One time, this guy came up to us and I was just jogging away, nice and steady. And this guy came over and I saw him kind of glance over and look at the screen of how fast I was going. And he came on, steps on the treadmill, and he set his treadmill like 1 mile an hour faster. I was like, oh, here we go. So he kind of got into this like this game where I started to speed up, and then because I speeded up, he speeded up, and then we were both going there, and we were both going kind of pretty fast, and I think we kind of maxed out the treadmills. We were both kind of racing each other on these treadmills, and it became a real obvious kind of competition. After maybe like 3 or 4 minutes, the guy kind of looked across, started laughing, nodded like, okay, yeah, it's a bit of a laugh and a joke. So we wound it back down, started having a jog, and we broke into conversation. Now, well, the first thing he started asking was, wow, you've got a good run in, got a good race, that was good fun. What sport do you do? And I was like, oh well, I do Thai boxing. He says, wow, yeah, that's you're good at running. I was like, oh, well, what do you do? He says, oh, I'm a marathon runner. I was like, wow, cool, okay, so I'm kind of competing against marathon runners here. He was like, oh, what kind of mileage do you do? What kind of mileage do you do per week? Well, at this point, I was probably doing like 40 to 50 miles a week running. Now, if anyone's into running, they'll know that that's quite a distance to put your body through that kind of trauma and stuff like that. You get like your legs get tired and all this kind of stuff. And he was kind of taken back by that. He was like, wow. Says, I'm a marathon runner and I don't even do that kind of mileage. I was like, whoa, okay. This was like a real turning point in making me kind of think about spend my time more smart. This is when I got a personal trainer. I stopped spending so much time running, got more onto like a resistance program, worked with a top quality personal trainer. There was Nigel Davis was my first personal trainer, and then I had Paul Swainson, another high level personal trainer who helped us out fantastically as I got up to kind of European title level, and it was a great help and made me a more rounded fighter. So I maintain my strength, and that was great. So yeah, that was the way that I kind of optimized my time the best. The next thing that I wanted to cover was, people like to promote this idea of rivals, but in all honesty, I don't really care about rivals. I do what I want to do, and if people want to copy or pitch themselves to be rivals to gain relevance or something, okay, cool. If that's what you want to do, then that's what you want to do. It is what it is. A lot of people try and like build their persona off the back of other people's hard work in it to kind of maybe make themselves relevant or something like that. And yeah, okay, Fair enough. If that's what they want to do, then that's what they want to do, and they may do very well for it in the short term. And kind of look, this is one of the reasons why I'm putting out all this content for free, because I basically just want the best for people. I want people to be good at what they're doing, and if I can help in any way, even if they consider me to be their rivals, I don't mind helping my rivals, because they're going to inspire me to push me to work harder. You're following this. I hope you're following this line of thinking, because it's only through competition that we get better. It's only through having to push ourselves more that we learn to be better. So I don't care if I help people that consider themselves rivals to me. Cool, good. Hope they're doing well, and hope they gain every success that they want. I'm going to carry on doing what I'm doing, and you can use that content and use that information however you want. That's cool. I'm still going to be me, and I'll do what I do best. And all I'm looking to do is help people. So in an altruistic way, even if you're helping your opponents, even if I'm helping my guy's opponents, okay, they're not getting my full-time attention, but there might be some gem that helps them and spurs them on, which in turn is gonna push my guys to work harder as well. So then everybody gets better. That's the essence of it. That's what everybody wants, to be better at whatever they're doing. So if they can be better or make it easier, then cool. Competition makes people better, and that's good. The thing about it is that if people are kind of fed, these their next opponents, or they kind of bull themselves up without the challenge, without the competition, they're given opponents which are easier to handle. It doesn't mean that they have to grind hard, or they don't have to go hunting. Like I was saying the other day, everyone wants to eat, but no one wants to hunt. Everyone wants to have that big old steak, but they don't want to spend the time going out and hunting the animal. Do you know what I mean? That people want to get the label of being a fighter, but they don't want to live a fighter lifestyle. Fighter lifestyle comes with a lot of commitment and a lot of hard work. There was a bit of a laugh and a joke with Alex Seddon the other day, or the guy from up in Scotland, former fighter, great fighter. When we had this like different change, like different difference of opinion, we started talking about like sacrifice, and yeah, okay, it got to some points where there were things that I wanted to do, but I prioritized my fighting over a party. I prioritized my training over going to a birthday party or going out for a meal with people. I prioritized my dieting over enjoying a pizza with my mates. You know how hard it is when you sat there, all your mates are having pizza, and you've got a piece of chicken in a Tupperware box, and the smallest handful of rice when you're cutting weight like 2 3 weeks before a fight, and they're all scoffing down big, juicy, thick, cheesy pizza. It's hard work, and it takes a certain mindset. That's where the sacrifice comes in. And even though it may be bringing a little bit of drama, calling it a sacrifice, well, if that's what we need to do to get that message across of these small challenges, these small victories, these small tests of commitment, then yeah, it does take sacrifice, it does take hard work. And if you want to achieve anything, then these are the sacrifices that you have to make. As I've been saying, I've been working this morning, sort of like from 6:30 this morning, and I'll probably be working through till like near on 10 o'clock tonight. It's a long old day. So, like I say, optimizing training, working on your strengths, and getting back to this like juggling lifestyle of wearing many hats. I'm having to juggle work, and my lifestyle, my own fitness, parenting, my other work, admin, all everything else. And yeah, okay, I've got a lot of great people around me that help me achieve these things. I've got people at the gym that help us out with coaching and covering classes and stuff like that. My wife Jo, she helps us out. She covers classes and she helps out with it with some of the admin and juggling with the kids. And it's hard work. But the thing is that everyone's not just kind of sat back in a like cushy lifestyle, thinking that I've done a load of work now, so I've got loads of time to chill out and watch TV and watch my favorite program and stuff. That's the kind of thing that kind of gets deprioritized. If you're that intent on achieving your goal, you're gonna grind your ass off. You're gonna work, and get to where it is. The thing is, that work doesn't seem like work when you enjoy it. And finding that passion, finding that happiness, finding that enjoyment in this task is what I enjoy. Going back to the flow state stuff that we did on the last episode, the some people may see the struggle. I've relaxed into that struggle now. I get these days where it doesn't even feel like work, and it can like 14, 15-hour days can just fly by, and I don't even recognize it. This is the flow state that I was talking about in the last episode, and if you want to have a little recap on that, it's only a 30-minute video, 30-minute podcast. So you'll get loads of information out of it on there. We was talking about so working this like aspiration and working out what your goals are. If you don't know what your goals are, you need to be writing these things down. For me, myself, I see a lot of people and a lot of the kind of martial arts world do the martial arts club as a like add-on to their daily life, to their day job. But a lot of people kind of bite their teeth and bite their tongue, and like they may not enjoy their day job as much as they enjoy doing martial arts, but they can't find a way of chasing that high. In 2008, I got made redundant. I had that choice taken away from me. I was in a well-paid job, working on the railway. I was like a technical counsel to the managing director and the board to see what they could and couldn't do with their next tasks on the railway, and I got made redundant. So it was like all of a sudden, I was posed with that kind of empty canvas. What do I want to do? So I started personal training, started following my mind coaching work, found that really interesting. And then in 2011, I set up Chuck D as a full-time martial arts gym, and it's just gone from strength to strength. My kind of goal setting and my ideals start coming in, and my aim is to run a national level martial arts gym and push world class like business and lifestyle over a 20, 30, 40 year program. A lot of people, they're not looking that far into the future. They may be looking at 1, 2, 3, maybe even 5 years into the future, and it's a hobby, and okay, because that's how their like lifestyle is structured, that works, and that's cool. But if people want to cross that barrier between it being a hobby and it being a lifestyle and a choice, then this is what I'm looking to do, in ensure the lifestyle that's required, just so that there's no illusions. Everyone talks about being your own boss and how fantastic it is, but people don't talk about the realness of doing 14, 15 hour days. And when you look back, sometimes there are highs, there are lows. You have to have that degree of realness to say it's not always plain sailing. It takes a lot of hard work to do what you love and keep hold of what you love and grow what you love. This is what we're kind of looking towards. There seems to be like more and more of these, the gyms doing like a half-assed job, getting in the gym, putting on a timer, getting people just doing pad work and not kind of pushing towards any excellence. And this is what like the 20, 30 years of martial arts experience has led me towards, is showing that people want to learn stuff. They don't want to be kind of teaching themselves. This is why I put so much effort into my coaching. So if you're coming down and you're training with us, then you can be assured that this is the level of integrity, the level of tuition, the level of thought that goes into everything that we're doing. So it takes guidance. And even if people are just kind of doing that, like plug on a timer and getting people sparring, yeah, okay, they're in it, they're involved, and there's going to be a lot of kind of self-learning in there. But what we're trying to, but from our perspective, from the Chuck D perspective, we're trying to broaden horizons. We're trying to open up opportunities to show techniques which are like world-class level. Things that I've learned from other fighters and people have shown me. I'm looking to pass this tuition on, and this is some of the work that's been done by Stuart Tomlinson at the Warrior Collective. He's done a great job in sharing a lot of these videos, and he's got a really big following. So yeah, it's this kind of aspiration of being the best version of you that you can be. I look to kind of document my story. This is what this podcast is about. It's just like documenting my experiences and just being able to kind of shoot the breeze and have a little conversation and say what I've been through and what I've had to do, and basically share my advice. Because my advice and my experience and my coaching comes from being in it for so long. I don't mind being arrogant to say like 99% of the time I'm right, because I've experienced it, because I've lived it. When I first started thinking about setting up my own gym, this was like when I'd just won my first English title. I'd been training for maybe six years, something like that. It's when Bad Company was down on Hale Hill Road, was training out of St. Aidan's Church. I had a conversation with Richard Smith outside, and we started saying about about wanting to set up my own gym. He says, take your time, there's no rush. He gave me some great advice in saying, you're not at the level yet where you can pass on that message. Just take your time and it'll all come together. And patience was one of the real big things that Richard told me about and pushed me towards. And I didn't really, to be honest, looking back, I probably didn't understand it. I was like, oh, okay, then it is what it is, and I'll just carry on training. I didn't realize the heights that I could get to. I didn't recognize the maybe the talent or the opportunities that I had at hand, and I was probably too eager. And Yeah, this has been a real big thing for me. It's a real big learning, is that a lot of time people just push and they're too keen and too like short-term minded to say, oh, okay, I've got enough experience to teach people how to smack the pads, jab, cross, hook, kick, do dead simple things like that, and think I can maybe make a quick buck off it or just get my own gym for ego purposes or something like that. But then that doesn't come with any kind of level of respect. It doesn't come with people that are saying that guy's kind of lived the lifestyle and now he's looking to pass it on. If you're getting in there too quickly, then it's going to need a different mindset and a different approach if the gym's going to be taken seriously. And I think it's important that people kind of recognize that. So like I said, this advice that I share is it's just my story, and I don't want people to kind of play victim because you had a tough experience. It is what it is. If I share my experience and you choose to follow it, then everyone's an individual. But the thing is, if it doesn't work out right, this is how you always get when people win, they're a great fighter. When people lose, I'm a shit coach. And it's that kind of, well, there has to be a trade-off. Now, one of the big things that I've one of my favorite stories that I've shared before is when I first fought a guy called Darren Collins. It was at Ritz's nightclub in Leeds. It was in the Merrion Centre, and Richard Smith, my coach, he was fighting for a European title. I stepped in, I weighed in the day before. We both weighed in, bang on the 62 kilo limit. Went home. When I got home, I basically slept for like 16 hours. I woke up, I packed my bag, I felt absolutely terrible. I'd hardly eaten, hardly drank. I was having cold sweats, I just couldn't get warm. And I said to, I got there, got to the show, turned around to Richard, who was also fighting, who fought, I can't remember the guy's name now, Delalio. It was for a European title. He was fighting an Italian guy. He was fighting on the same show. I turned around to him, and with all of his kind of pre-fight nerves and pre-fight stresses and show stresses and stuff like that, I turned around to him and said, "Richard, I don't think I can fight." Basically, there was very little compassion, very little sympathy. He just turned around to us and he said, "No, you're fighting, and that's the end of it. There was no discussion, no choices." He just says, "No, you're fighting. Get in the changing rooms." Okay, so I moved off, went into the changing rooms, somehow got through the medical. Fought, I was having cold sweats in the ring, ended up winning on points. The very next day, I still felt terrible. Went to the doctors. When I got to the doctors told me I had pneumonia. I had fluid on my lungs, and one of my lungs was basically not functioning. I was in such a terrible state, and then I was on antibiotics and stuff for like the next 2 weeks. I must have been lucky. I must have been fortunate, and I've got away with it that time. It was a risk, and there's certainly some lessons to be learnt there. If you're of a like negative mindset, then okay, I probably wouldn't have fight. I probably wouldn't even turned up, and then just rang him. But the fact is that I did. The fact is that I did turn up, and that I had the strength of mind and the strength of clarity to be determined and have the respect for my coach and for the promotion and everything to turn up and show that if I wasn't well enough, then I'm surprised it didn't show up in the pre-fight medical, but it is what it is. But the thing is that this work ethic, this dedication, this commitment and respect that I had for the promotion and for my coach, it wouldn't let me do it. It wouldn't let me do anything half-assed. These are my values and part of the. It's all part of the equation in order to be a champion. If you want to be a champion and you want to achieve things, this is the work ethic, it's the dedication, it's the respect that you've got to have, and you've got to work your ass off, even in the face of adversity, even when things aren't going your way, even when you're having a bad day at the office, you still got to turn up, you still got to show up, and you still got to keep pushing and grinding. Like I say, everyone wants to eat, but no one wants to hunt. If you don't want to put in the work, then it's easy to quit. But that's not what we're about. That's not what we're aspiring towards. And had I not had that experience, I wouldn't have had this great story to tell. Where even with pneumonia, I fought and won. Your body will do great things. Your body will step up when it has to. And if you've got that belief and that fitness and that determination, then this is how great things happen. Next bit was on to what people do and what people say. Everyone wants to be a fighter, but they don't want to train. Everyone wants to be a fighter, but they don't want to lose weight. Everyone wants to be a fighter, but they don't want to put in the work. And this is what we come back to, this work ethic, this dedication, this commitment. And they're all kind of gelled together with an underlying theme of it being inside of you. Okay? These are things that you kind of look at on the wall, and all of a sudden it's kind of magically like dragged inside of you, so then that becomes part of you and part of your being, part of your makeup. This is something that's already inside of you that just kind of needs highlighting and recognizing. If you've got this inside of you, you know this is what makes a fighter. This is what makes a someone that's got the commitment, that's got the hard work, that's willing to do what it takes to win. And that's what we're all about. That's what we're pushing towards. And even with a ridiculous work ethic and you're dedicated and the hard work that goes on behind closed doors, if you don't, even if you lose, this is merely feedback. Okay? Like on the John Kavanagh book, John Kavanagh's Conor McGregor's coach, he wrote a book, You Either Win or You Learn. That's what the L means on people's records. You've had a winning opportunity and you've had a learning opportunity. There is no losing. If you lose, when you bring a negative mindset to it, then this is what's going to kind of drag you into that negative mind space. You lose the if you lose and you focus on the loss, then you lose the learning opportunity. I've had people that have trained with us that have fought, they've won loads of fights, and then all of a sudden they've lost, and they spit the dummy out. And then it's sometimes it's a question of ego. Sometimes it's a question of looking for an answer, looking for someone to blame. But if you've got this integrity, you know that when you've put the hard work in, you know when you've had the dedication, and you know when you've cut corners. Even if you're telling your coach the right thing, you know what the right answers are, but whether you're actually doing that is a different matter. I only see people in the gym for an hour or two every night. But if you're going out and scoffing pizza in with all your mates, and you don't have the dedication to stick to a diet and stuff like that, then this is the strength of mind. This is the sacrifice that we've talked about. So you gotta have that inner fire and learn to feed it. what we're looking for is to put that into emotional intelligence into play. You have to be smart enough to compartmentalize emotion. Now, this was one of the big things when I worked at the railway. 1 minute, my boss would be absolutely rollicking us, shouting at us, saying that I've done something wrong. And then the next minute, he's asking me to do something. The telling off kind of sticks with the person that's been told off. And then the next minute, the boss has let go of that emotion and they've moved on. And then they say, oh, do you mind if you could just do this for us? Could you do that for us? And it's like, hang on a minute. 1 minute you're bollocking me. Next minute, you're asking me to do something. How about no? How about I disregard that, okay? I'm not going to do it to the best of my abilities now, because you've just given me a telling off. Now, that's a selfish mindset. If you can compartmentalize that emotion around the task in hand, then you can accept the feedback that it's taken for the boss to then come in and say, you've done this wrong, you've done that wrong. Okay, let's keep it around that. But if you allow that to infect everything else, then this is when you start affecting your whole mindset around someone's personal demeanor and for someone's personal approach. And this is what we're talking about with emotional intelligence. With the emotional intelligence, you've got the smartness to keep the fallout to the task in hand. If you don't have that emotional intelligence, then this is where you're on the learning edge again. It takes you back to another learning opportunity. What do I need to learn in order to grow emotionally to keep this knowledge compartmentalized and this emotion compartmentalized so I can kind of keep that attitude to that particular task while I do something else? So this is what we're looking for, and something that's been really big as part of the development of fighters in this past week, and something that I've really kind of learned to grasp as a coach. Now, like yesterday, we had a task with some of the boxers at Queen Ethelberg's at the school where I work. In the boxing class, some of the guys were looking to use sparring as a medium to sort out their like playground fallouts. They wanted to have a fight, but they wanted to do it legally. They wanted to get away with it without being told off. From my perspective, I could see that there was a bit of a problem between these couple of kids, and then all of a sudden they're letting haymakers swing in wild and letting their emotion get the better of them. One of the things about sparring, if you listen back to the sparring episode, is that we're learning to control our emotion. We're learning to control that red mist. And if you haven't got the emotional intelligence to keep that under wraps and control this red mist, then you're only going to hit this like toughness glass ceiling. You're only going to get to a point where you're like pushing up against this window and this ceiling of development, because you don't have the smartness in order to carry the technique from the technique classes into a more heated, more testing situation. Now, yes, sparring is stressful, but what we're looking for in this stressful situation is learning to control the stress and control our reaction, control our response. If you can control your response, then this is what's gonna help us and let us get better. So, yeah, that kind of brings us to the end of today's little interview. I've followed some lines of thought and shared a couple of stories. Hope you enjoyed it. If anyone's got any questions, or feel free to tag people in on the Facebook post for any of the names that I mentioned. I'll try and tag in as many as I can when I'm going through. But I hope you enjoyed it, and I'll see you for the next episode. All right, cheers, guys. Thank you. Bye.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.